You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture, and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. When last we left Shake Them Ropes at the end, we had plugged that we were going to have children on this week.
We were very excited about
children. We were very excited about this.
And then
Chris killed the children.
You know, okay, the allegations that I'm a child killer are monstrous. I'm ashamed that you would go in that direction with it.
Well, I went with you.
Let me explain.
We're getting this before you get arrested, so it's great.
No, this is good. Yeah, no. I'm on the run right now. Yes. In my new car. So let me explain this to the audience. Like you might explain it to kids. Let's still keep some of the vibe of Shake Them Kids alive, shall we? Sometimes when a person likes another person, that's really nice, unless that other person likes the person that they used to like, and then that's not so nice. That's a sad thing, Jeffrey. That's a sad thing. No, it's just not a very good thing.
I thought you were just gonna say, yeah, they weren't available, but no, we're going into the DJ.
Oh no. So when that happens, then those people can no longer know each other so much. And that's where we're at this week, people. Sorry about the loss of Shake Them Kids, but trust that old Novi is on the right path.
Yeah, and now Jeff is scrambling for content this week.
Oh, I give you nothing but the best content. And I was like, you know,
yeah, we could have stopped it. You give me nothing.
I mean, also true. Also true.
I am pulling teeth sometimes. No.
I do not give you nothing. Are you saying you are like pulling teeth? Sure. Or does it it depends on who we are.
Let's just move on. Good news from my health perspective. I am clear of cancer 1 year later. Thank you for all the well wishes on the Twitter and the Instagram and the whatnot. Starting off, attention must be paid. Chris, are you a Tony Bennett fan?
I mean, do you know the way to San Jose?
I think that's Dionne Warwick. I think whatever. What you're thinking, I left my heart in San Francisco.
Whatever. He's saying about California cities. Yeah. He warmed the cockles of the hearts of millions of Americans. And I just sang like him, sort of, ish.
Yes. Yeah, we're music geeks. I've never been a Tony Bennett fan. I appreciate the talent and what he brings, but I the people who liked him kind of liked him ironically, I think. You know, he did the Lady Gaga album, you know, that kind of.
Well, okay, but like then he's had several reboots. The thing I admire about Tony Bennett is that he managed to keep his music enterprise going
for
multiple different decades.
Get paid. We're big fans.
He had his peak era, and then like he came back way late, and like you know, you didn't necessarily think Tony Bennett was gonna you know necessarily light the world on fire in his 60s, and like he ended up having a really good run in his later half of his life.
You know what I admire actually?
It's pretty impressive.
I admire that he was never ironic about it. He was always genuine about his love of big band / standards. You know. I absolutely love his cameo in The Simpsons when they went to Capital City and he's just doing that. But yeah. Okay. Celebrity death out of the way. I want to give a personal note. Rick Scaia, I believe that's how you say the last name. I'm going off of 30 some odd years of memory here, passed away this week. And he was kind of important to the internet wrestling community of the early and late 90s. He was one of the first people I knew on RSPW, Rexport Pro Wrestling. He did something called News from Dayton, and we were around the same age. And then later he teamed up with Mikasa and WrestleManiac site with Scott Keith and Christopher Robert Zimmerman, who did recaps and reviews, amongst others. Personally, Rick Scaia metaphorically saved my life. One of the first shows I ever traveled to when I was a college kid was the RSPW meetup for Double Tables at the ECW Arena in Philly. And I got there not knowing anything about travel or the city of Philadelphia or what have you. And I didn't have a ticket due to, quote unquote, miscommunication from a well-known internet wrestling personality that will go unnamed at this time. But Rick got me into the arena that night and didn't really know me, but said, hey, you know, I'll get you in. Don't worry about blah, blah, blah. It's just one of those kind of internet friendships that then later, you know, people grow apart and things like that. He passed away from cancer this past week at the age of 49. Absolute prince of a man who helped me when he didn't have to, but just cool. Does name ring any bells for you or no?
I actually did not know him. No.
Okay, cool. No, that's fine. This is from my past, like 92, 93, early on in rec sport pro wrestling back in the day. I was not active. I was more of a lurker, but he's one of those guys who would always post news because he was also working for a newspaper at the time and had a column there. And him and Herb Kunze, I believe, were the two guys who really, you know, basically cribbed a lot of news from other sources and gave them to us internet nerds at the time. Other news, Eric Young debuting for Impact this past week. He was actually under contract with WWE until he asked to be released in April due to Vince McMahon coming back and him morally not being comfortable. That's how I will couch this with Vince McMahon and his predilections. But he was set to be a part of the new Wyatt family angle. And he just said, I will not work for Vince McMahon due to his accusations. Let's put it that way, Chris. I think that's strong. And I think Impact's a good place for him.
I think that's strong. I think Impact is a good place. And I think, you know, especially if you're in your earlier part of your career or whatever, McMahon's not going to be there forever. Now at this point, you don't have to completely sacrifice your career to take a principled stand. So
he's 42, and I could see wanting to grab the bag. I could see, you know, I could see Triple H wanting to use him when they re-signed him back, because I thought Sanity got a bad rap. I thought Sanity was money-making.
I'll admit that I missed that it was Eric Young at the start. I caught everything but Eric Young. And when she said Sanity, now, oh, yeah, Eric Young's, like, actually in his 40s, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the other thing is that, like, that's all fine and dandy. Can't believe I forgot that it was Eric Young. There we go. Good. This is a good episode. I feel like we're just coming in really hot today. So here's the other thing about Eric Young, though, when he was in NXT and then like when he got called up to the main roster
to do nothing on the main roster,
But like there's like the way the camera is framed in NXT, smaller people don't come off as that small, but they go into a wider shot. And if you aren't on the right side, you know, if you're not on the right side of that and you look small a little bit already in NXT, you tend to look really small on the main roster. And Young just like isn't a Vince looking guy. So while I wholeheartedly support the principled stand of Young, I also kind of like go, but like, did you really think there was a lot of money to be made back in WWE? I don't think they're gonna put Sanity back together. I mean, if anything, he'd be like a henchy or a job guy or something, like, you know, he wouldn't.
No, but the money's better.
The money's better, sure.
And look, at 42, are you really expected to be pushed as a top star? Or do you want to go to a place that, hey, they'll cover my medical if I get hurt type of a thing, rather than, you know, a smaller company that may not have the resources of that? I mean, I get people not wanting guys to go to the evil empire, especially when Vince is there. But
well, you know, and who Vince is going to push.
No, I mean, yes, you do. But you also know that I think Hunter was really trying to make good on the people that Vince fired. I do. I think he was like, I made these guys promises or whatever when I brought them up to the main roster, or when they were brought up to the main roster, that they'd get a chance, or they'd get some exposure, they'd have a chance to make money, and I want to make right by them. I don't think Triple H is a saint. Don't get me wrong. But I think him bringing back all the people they fired, I mean, he literally brought back almost everybody they fired. I think the only exceptions might be the Authors of Pain. There might be a few others in there that I'm forgetting, but for the most part, I think Triple H was like, look, this reflects poorly on me. I need to do right by them. But, you know, I get that too. Ian Riccoboni, officially All Elite. He had been working on his old Ring of Honor contract, and he was the man on the play-by-play on this past Saturday's Collision while Kevin Kelly does the G1. Good hire, great hire. Do we have too many announcers under contract?
Riccoboni is not someone that I'm particularly emotionally connected to. AEW announced team.
Mm-hmm.
For me, if I at this point was going to like rate the announcers, I think my favorite is Taz. I really think like Taz sort of is the best out of the bunch. He does this like really nice job of being a character and yet still being able to call a match, and like he just like threads a tone needle so smoothly and naturally that I always like listen to him and go like he's gotten...
I'm gonna push back because I think Taz goes into joke territory too often.
There's times where Taz doesn't care, and I mean they tape a lot of content. I like, look, you're talking to a guy who just had a brain fart on Eric Young. I think it's easy to lose focus when you're doing recorded live audio. Like if you're like looking at the results or something or anything, it's very easy to miss something or just like have like a lapse of tone. And does he fall into the impulses of making jokes sometimes? Yes. And that's even more true. And this maybe is a byproduct of the fact that he was doing all the like undercard shows with limited viewership, and like the leash was basically off for those guys to just have fun for however long they were doing the taping.
Shivani's still my guy. I'm still, you know, emotionally connected. And I do like Excalibur. I just think Excalibur needs to get control of his booth. And also they need to stop the Micro Machines guy plug of matches at the end of the night. It's just ridiculous. It makes it seem like it's just a throwaway type thing. But
well, how do you possibly process any of it when you say all of it that fast?
Yes.
I always think about that. Like, who thinks this is a good way to disseminate content? That I just get on and immediately start reading the results of matches really, really fast and just like give my thoughts on them like like that. You wouldn't be able to hold on to any of it, or you maybe would hold on to one of it. There's got to be a better way, right?
Yeah. In ratings, this is somewhat old ratings, but it's interesting because Chris and I often talk about, are we in a wrestling boom? And we kind of are, and we kind of aren't. It's very odd because wrestling is still very, very popular. We're going to last week. And the nightly standings on cable, Raw on July 10th was number 3 for the night behind 2 home run derby related shows and second in the time slot. NXT on July 11th, built around the Judgment Day appearance, was in first place for the night for the first time in the history of the show. Dynamite on July 12th was in second place behind the U.S. versus Panama soccer friendly on FS1. Rampage on July 14th placed 9th for the night and was 3rd place in the time slot behind House Hunters and the NBA Summer League game. Collision on July 15th, 4th for the day, 2nd in the time slot behind UFC prelims. In the overall entertainment charts, Raw finished 1st for the week on cable this week. 90 Day Fiancé on Sunday finished 2nd, Dynamite 3rd, Collision was 11th, NXT 12th, Battle of the Belts was 25th, and Rampage was 61st. And AEW Dynamite this week, featuring Blood and Guts on a weeknight for competition, WEAK, was the top-rated show on cable by far, and actually in real percentage numbers, the top show on television for the day. Show did 953,000 viewers with a 0.34, 441,000, 18 to 49, and a 0.24 in 18 to 34, jumping in a little bit. In actual 18 to 49 numbers based on homes with access to the show, AEW did a 0.77 to 0.56 for the Country Music Association Fest on ABC in second place. In total, 18 to 49 viewers, both ABC and CBS beat TBS over the 2 hours based on being in far more homes, but TBS beat Fox and NBC. Thoughts?
That was a lot too. That was that kind of felt like an Excalibur thing there.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So ratings for SmackDown again, what was the number?
Oh, I don't have the ratings for SmackDown in front of me, but it did a pretty big number. I think it did over like 2.3 million or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, like there, I guess we were sort of wrong about the Bloodline angle having run out of steam, right?
This week's going to be interesting because they're on FS1. Of all places.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, it's Friday, July 21st, and we definitely forecasted doom after WrestleMania, not belting Cody, but it seems right now that WWE's ratings are doing pretty well.
Well, we have a secondary act now that people are following because Judgment Day is a hit.
Yeah. Yes.
Judgment Day is
Mysterio. Is actually doing a little bit of a ratings movement.
They literally moved the ratings on NXT to win the night for the first time in their history. And then this week wasn't as good, but they were still there. I mean, it's one of those things where this is a hot act.
And it's yet again, they have managed to take a thing that was stale and dead and revive it. And, and I'm actually like kind of amazed now, because they're in the same thing with the Bloodline. This is like a really stale storyline.
Yeah, because once Edge left, when Edge left originally, they were kind of in a bit of a
squad. They were just there.
Yeah.
And now, like, they are four clear characters.
To the point where they've even stopped what they were planning to do, because I think JD McDonagh was eventually going to be added to this group, and that looks like that's been put on hold permanently.
It's very interesting. Every week, the reaction to Dominic, I mean, people love hating Dominic.
Yes.
And what's great is they don't even know why they hate him at this point. They just hate him. They don't even hate him because of the stuff he did to his dad. They just hate him now.
Yeah, they just want to boo to boo him.
They just want to boo to boo him.
Yes.
It's really interesting. It's like they've like Pavlovian conditioned Mondo heat onto this guy. I hope like his dad, he like never goes face. Like his dad never goes heel and Dominic never goes face. He spent his entire career as a heel.
I think Dominic's, it's weird because watching that match against Wesley, where I think Dominic was the one calling that match, it didn't look as good as when Dominic's in there with guys with far more experience, so to speak, like your Reyes, like your Sheamus's, like whoever type of a thing. I don't know if he can be a heel with guys, how do I put this, who haven't been doing the quote-unquote main event WWE style. Like, he doesn't have the indie cred to work with a guy like Wesley, so to speak. So that's going to be interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, who do we think Dominic's going to be in his first program with?
For the North American title?
Yeah, and you are bringing up a really interesting quandary with him. Like, typically the heels pace the match, right?
Right.
And he has been getting carried by really veteran baby faces who call the matches, generally speaking. And then Dominic, like, is able to do his stuff, and he has nuclear heat anyways, and it's all good. In NXT, he's being asked to do a different thing.
Yes.
In NXT, he is now being asked to carry these matches. Essentially, this is a training school for him. And I will be interested to see if he can figure out how to actually lead a dance rather than just be a dance partner who is very easy to carry.
I think there are guys on the NXT roster who can do this. Like, for example, I think...
I hope they don't cop out, though, and like bring a veteran babyface on NXT to work with Mysterio.
Like, if they want to reposition Mustafa Ali back as a babyface, even though he's been doing this heel stuff lately, but that was in service of the North American title type of a thing. Right now, who are the veteran babyfaces that are from NXT visiting there? Because I was thinking Apollo Crews was on NXT, but he was done.
Like, Tyler Bate, I guess, can, you know, carry him for a bit.
Yeah, but he's never been on the main roster. He could. You're right. He could. I think, I don't know. I was saying the Russian kid.
Dragunov?
Dragunov.
You don't think Dragunov carry Mysterio?
I think that, well.
Really?
I don't think they'd let Dragunov call that match. I think they'd let...
That would be the most important part. You got to do that.
Yeah, I think Dominic would be the one calling that match because they defer to his main roster veteranship and stuff like that. I don't know. I don't know the inner goings on enough for that, but no, it's interesting to think about. Well, we can discuss a little more on the Lazy River.
It'd be funny if they brought down Butch. Our boy Butch.
Butch is actually on tonight's SmackDown going up against Dominic Mysterio.
See, look at my ability to see the future. I'm good. What can I say? When I'm good, I'm good.
Dwayne Johnson will reportedly be earning the most money in history for a Hollywood lead for the movie Red One on Amazon. Reports are that Johnson was guaranteed $50 million up front for the movie that will be out Christmas week. This breaks the record of $40 million that Robert Downey Jr. got for Captain America Civil War and that Will Smith got for King Richard.
I love me a good The Rock movie.
No, you don't.
That's true.
It's the middle of a strike, and he's getting $50 million up front. That'll be out.
One of the actors is getting paid.
Well,
Are you on the side of the actors or not in this strike?
Well, I am on the side of the actors, but I want to know, how are they filming this thing? Is there a waiver on there? Because it says it's going to be out Christmas week. Unless it's already been filmed and this is just old news that I'm reading.
Which is
also a possibility, but it hit the headlines this week. So,
or if they're filming it on international waters or something.
Well, here's the thing: is for the purposes of the strike, it only affects AMPTP providers. I don't know if Amazon is under that.
Mm.
So it might be one of those exceptions type of a thing. And I'm not positive of that, but I mean, The Rock is also one of those guys. I think The Rock would cross a line. I gotta be honest with you. For that amount of money, I think, you know, hey, come to the pickets and help us. Yeah, it'll be like Tom Cruise. Yeah, I'm gonna support in other ways. You know, and then he buys everybody lunch, type of a thing. That's The Rock. That's what I think. But. Moving on. Belt changes that I know of so far. Dominic Mysterio, yes, new NXT North American champion. On the Ring of Honor pay-per-view tonight, Aussie Open, your new Ring of Honor tag champs. And I think I'm forgetting one. Oh, yeah, Trinity is your new Knockouts champion on Impact. Any thoughts, Chris?
I don't watch Impact. You know this. I mean, I know people go.
Are you
there,
hyped for the new Ring of Honor tag champs, Aussie?
Yeah, oh God, no! That on the other hand, I am dialed in on. Who are they?
Like I said, pulling teeth.
I am not pulling teeth. You get like these quality nuggets. You just have to dig for them.
I was expecting children
that's
today
not
on this
dental
show.
Work. That's mining. It's a completely different thing.
I was all hyped to talk to some child about Bailey and Sasha, and you ruined that for me.
I have a child inside me that like lives and sings.
God, I have a joke that would not go over well.
Stop that. Stop that. That's a horrible joke. You're canceled. Get out.
I know I would be. That's why I'm not saying it.
Oh yeah, right. I'm pre-canceling.
Can I move on with this show, please? That's the end of the news. We're heading to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched. Did you watch anything this week?
I actually watched a lot of wrestling.
Okay, here we go then. And whatever we watched, whatever's on our minds, whatever. I'm just afraid you're going to fall asleep during this show.
I'm not. You know what? I'm not going to fall asleep. I just get momentarily distracted. Like, you know, it's been a long
Because I'm not looking at you while we're recording this. So I don't know if you're even there at the time, but we'll continue this. Whatever we watch.
Look at Nail Master Motto from Hollow Knight every week, and you never thank me once.
That's because I'm looking at my notes. Okay. I'm going to start again because I want to once again praise, love, adore FTR versus Jay White and Rockhard Juice Robinson. I adored Collision this week. I loved Collision this week. I'll have some not so good things to say about Dynamite, which is going to drive a lot of people nuts, but I get that. I will earn that. But let me speak on this. Was it the greatest tag match on free television? Maybe. Technically, sure. I will go with that in terms of athleticism and stuff. I'm partial because of my fandom to the Midnight Express versus Fantastics on Worldwide 1 week, whatever, back in 88, I think it was, or 87. I can't remember. Dave references it in the Observer this week, so we're kind of a couple of seconds with that. Was it the best 2 out of 3 falls match ever in terms of tag teams on TV? Probably. The problem is my barometer is when wrestling was much hotter on Saturday night's main event. There was a Brainbusters versus Demolition 2 out of 3 falls that I absolutely adored. And I can't watch it anymore because Tully Blanchard absolutely kills Barry Darceau with that chair. And Darceau still complains about having brain damage from it. So it's hard for me to watch that. But I think the only thing that gives me pause in overpraising this as much as other people have is the heat level is not there for me for FTR versus Bullet Club Gold, like it was when Jay and Dax were doing their own program on Twitter to do the Briscoes versus FTR, anything like that. If the heat were off the charts here and this felt like a feud where two teams really, really hate each other, I would definitely, I mean, look, I'm already putting this in my top five, probably, and it's probably my favorite match of the year. But in terms of legacy type things, it won't be as memorable for me because I just don't feel the heat was there, Chris.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question of where to place this match because on one hand, I was watching, I was like, this is actually really good. I was not expecting that. But the reason I wasn't expecting it is because Bullet Club Gold for me is very schmeh. And like the act itself is just not a very strong heel foil. There was not a lot of intensity between these two teams per se. And like, I mean, when FTR, it was weird because like FTR did that little heel spot where they grabbed the ropes and like that, not that they were turning heel or anything like that. It was just, it was, I don't know, like it almost felt playful. And so it didn't, you're right, didn't have the heat. It was really well executed. God, that crucifix into the neck breaker. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Really great near fall. And in that sense, it vastly outperformed the expectations I had for that match. Like all the near fall spots really had me engaged. But yeah, for the really, really high quality of work that was there, the thing that's missing for me is the actual true nature and heat to the program. It's kind of formless.
I'm going to move on to another match on that show. What did you think of Ricky Starks and CM Punk and then the entire just... I understand I'll give it to you this way, because this was the Twitter narrative. The Twitter narrative is that this was just like when Owen Hart won the Slammies and didn't offer congratulations, but Jushin Thunder Liger being brought in just as a punchline for Ricky Starks taking the the Owen trophy and walking off.
I thought it was almost sort of like a weird like take on like the double turn thing too with like Brett, where like Punk's sort of working heelish during the match, but at the end it's actually Ricky Starks who turns heel.
Yeah. I had some friends who were very angry that it's like, we're plugging Jushin Thunder Liger and that's it. And there's no feud that's going to happen between Ricky and Jushin. There's no one shot that's going to happen. It was just like, oh, it's just for that ha ha line of him. Oh, look, it's Owen would have really liked that joke type of a thing. And it turned a lot of people that I know off.
Here's my thought on the Starks heel turn. It's a complete concession that the Jericho push did nothing for this man.
Yes. Yes.
The fact that we are doing a heel reboot means that the babyface push and what was supposed to launch him instead crashed him. And now he needs to be rebooted. I, on one hand, think it's fine. I think that actually Punk's work with Starks has helped heat him up, but it's indicative of other failings.
Your turn on the river.
Okay, on the river. What was the point of the Britt Baker and the other person match? Like, why was that on Dynamite? We sort of talked about this briefly on the show, and I found myself... What do you mean before the show?
Well, we didn't talk about this on the show.
No, we talked about this before the show.
Yes, that's what I said.
Okay, we did.
You said we briefly talked about this on the show, and I said we haven't talked about it yet. Okay.
I thought we said we talked about it before the show.
I just said we talked about it before the show.
Don't debate me. I want to talk about Britt Baker and Kayla Sparks, and instead we're talking about time.
Okay, no.
Well, you want to talk about time.
Here's the point.
Is that how you want to use our time talking about time, Hawkins?
God help me.
Is that what you want this show to degenerate into? Just a conversation about time? I don't want that. I want to talk about Britt Baker and Kayla Sparks.
It was to get a quick women's match on there, but I was like, there's
just like a total like vibe killer, flow killer to me. It felt pointless. Britt Baker doesn't need an enhancement match, and I thought that if you're gonna do that, right, and you're trying to do that as like I guess a showcase for Kayla Sparks, at least let her do something. And instead, she just scrambled until she got caught.
No, I don't think it was a showcase for Kayla Sparks at all. But I was expecting a Britt Baker promo after the squash because it was like, we're bringing out Britt because she's our star. And then she's going to say what her next program is in front of this big market crowd in Boston. And then she's going to get, the huge, star treatment. But it was basically to bring her out to say DMD and to go back to the back. And I was just like, yeah, no, I was a little confused about this, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I just thought it was a poor usage of time, and I thought the match stunk. And I found myself weirdly irritated by it. I was just trying to figure out if there was a deeper reason.
Speaking of weirdly irritated, here we go, kids. I am of the few that did not care for... I basically tolerated Dynamite. I as much as I loved Collision, let me go through my points here. This may take a while, Chris, but we can all talk about Dynamite in one fell swoop here.
Okay, because yeah, no, next place I was going was MJF and Cole. So
okay, good. I'll go in order then. The Jungle Boy reboot. All right, so we're metaphorically burying him in the desert. After we had him metaphorically burying Christian. Or if you recall that promo. And I don't understand the reboot or the relaunch because it feels like they haven't thought this through. What is this new Jungle Boy? Is he Hollywood Jack Perry? Is he Jungle Man Jack Perry? Is he just, as my friend on the Dynamite show, Paul Fontaine says, is he just basically John Hennigan? which is how he kind of looks with the ponytail and the sunglasses. We didn't sit him down and we didn't go over this and think about this. Now I have a theory and I'm going to put it to you next, but why are we playing Beethoven's Fifth as his entrance music? That didn't seem to fit at all with the,
with the
tone. And I have a theory about this, Chris.
He's reuniting with Christian.
No.
Oh.
My theory is he is going to be a Randy Savage type clone. And the choice of Beethoven's Fifth is much like Randy Savage's choice of Pomp and Circumstance. And that his Elizabeth in this dealing, we're getting Anna Jay with this act now that the JAS is broken up. And Anna Jay is going to be the new Elizabeth. And Jungle Boy, Jack Perry, or whatever we're going to call him now, is going to be the new Randy Savage. That is my theory. I don't know if that's correct, but I will let you expound on that now.
It's interesting. If that's what they're doing, then Beethoven's Fifth was a poor choice of classical music for this.
Yeah.
It's just not a very good eventual babyface theme. And if you're going to go that way, you need to have something that actually manages to work in both directions.
It's not a heel theme either, though.
No,
da-na-na-na.
Not really.
if
anything, Beethoven's Seventh is a much stronger choice.
Oh, Joy?
No, that's his ninth.
That's his ninth. What's the seventh? Yeah,
the seventh. Bum 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 bum. Like it's melody. Doesn't actually really move much, so it's like hard for me. Yeah, it's all like in the chords or whatever.
Because Triple H used Beethoven's Ninth. He used Ode to Joy as his original theme in WWE.
Right. Yeah, Ode to Joy. I mean, like, I actually like, if anything, like Mozart's Unclined Night Music, like that would be a strong pick too.
You know, we could always go just hack and do Hall of the Mountain King.
Mm.
Because we already use Flight of the Valkyries and we use the 1812 Overture for heels for Cesaro and Brian Danielson. You know, I mean, there are, I mean, you know, Chopin would always be good here if you wanted to like do a funeral dirge type thing. Although that was more the Undertaker's gig.
What is it? Bolero that's like,
that's Carmen.
Yeah, Carmen. Yeah. That'd be a fun one. Yeah. That'd be a good one.
Yeah. That's an interesting heel theme now that I think about it. I hadn't thought about that, to be honest with you. But I mean, I really wish, look, if he's going to be Hollywood Jack Perry, go with buy the rights to a song that has to do with Hollywood. Hell, buy the theme to 90210.
That would be so awesome.
And call him Jack. I mean, Dave came up with his new name should be Jack McKay. Because he's just going to go hard in his father's most famous role type of a thing. But yeah, no, this did not hit for me. Okay, so we got that. We move on to the...
Here's my other thought, though. What is the point of the FTW title?
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Chris, I'm going to say this because I've been having this argument all day about other titles in AEW, and they're just props.
What's the identity of this title?
I don't know. It's the title that was associated with Team Taz and is now associated with whoever Taz likes type of a thing. That's the only explanation I have for it, other than it's a prop. It's a prop that we gave to Hook because he's associated with Taz. And it's not the FTW of ECW, so to speak. It's just there. It's like I asked, what's the point of the TNT and international titles? Do they have special meaning, or are they just props for their respective characters?
It's so crazy type of a thing. They haven't actually carved out like for the TNT title, right? That it's like 10 minutes. It's a 10 yes. minute time limit match. Like that's such an, especially with this many belts, it's so obvious to me at this point to reintroduce something like the WCW television title rules into one of these belts. But you bring up a really good point, which is that the FTW title lineage is just like, it's Taz's kid's belt, and now Jack Perry's done took it. And I don't actually think that's particularly interesting. If Jack Perry loses it to anyone else, it's not going to be like a really impressive win or anything.
Well, I mean, and that's the lineage is literally, it's Brian Cage when he joined Team Taz. Taz
gave it to him.
Yeah, Ricky Starks beating Brian Cage when Brian Cage wanted to quit Team Taz and turning on him. And then Hook beating Ricky Starks for it. That's the lineage.
That's a noble tradition.
Well, it's better than the TND title for the most part, which died after Cody left, I think. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll bring that back to prominence. Okay, so we go from that to the Britt Baker match.
You know what they should do with Jack Perry then? They should have him actually get a couple of these belts. Like, he should be the FTW and TNT champion.
Like Lance Storm, early WCW type stuff?
Yeah, essentially, if you want to heat up Jack Perry, I think that's actually the interesting move. You have him, like, sort of get like three mid-card titles.
Call him the Golden Boy, Jack Perry. and just give him a few titles.
And once he has the titles, like each time he wins, he's like sucking people out. But like once he has all three of the titles, at that point he's just like the ultimate mid-card weasel. He could be the mid-card comedy heel that they're making MJF.
Yeah. I thought the match with Hook was pretty good. Hook did some things finally. I mean, he had to work in this match, which was interesting. It wasn't a great match, but it was, it filled time, as they say, because, Blood and Guts was the main story. But yes, then we got to the MJF Adam Cole Comedy Hour, which, look, I understand people like this. And I understand it's quote unquote getting over to the people who like the wacky. I will still maintain that this is bad for your world champion. I am like that. I just, it's one of those weird things with me where I don't want that comedy to be with MJF. I want MJF to be the guy to carry this company, and I don't think he is. And then the tag match itself was just all, we had a dance off with, I was frustrated by this, Chris. Let me put you that way. You talk about it.
I thought that this match was a perfect dichotomy to the tag match on Collision. Like, I was watching these two shows and going, it really is two different universes. Because on Collision, you have this very, serious match where we're taking Bullet Club Gold, who are kind of a joke, and actually making them, like, pretty legit, like, and looking good in this match. Meanwhile, there are so many different storylines going on in this match that have to be buttressed with comedy segments that the point of this match to me was lost a lot. I mean, I guess, you had the moment where Adam Cole looks at the belt or whatever, but there was just way too much stuff going on. And the Adam Cole and MJF stuff continues to not work for me. This is just like, I mean, it's a novel way of utilizing MJF so that he's like having tag matches and stuff, and it does like give a weird presentation, but it all sums out to me to make him more like a mid-card comedy champion rather than like a serious, credible champ.
Yeah.
Like it's MJF, like it would have been interesting if MJF had actually like just basically dominated Daniel Garcia. Like one of the storylines of this match is that like MJF just completely has Garcia's number. You see some formidability out of the guy.
No, it was all about, hey, can you do a dive? And can we get to the double clothesline spot? And I'm like, okay.
Oh, come on. Who doesn't love the double clothesline?
It's funny. Don't get me wrong. And it's like, I'm being told.
Bring back the axe handle. Bring back the double axe handle.
I wrote because I wasn't enjoying it. I go, did Vince book Wednesdays too? It's like, no, because this comedy works and it's coherent story. And it's like, okay, I guess.
I mean, it really feels to me like it's incoherent that Sammy Guevara has not left the Jericho
Appreciation
Society yet. But okay, it's going in extreme slow motion. And
they bypassed Chris on the way up the ramp. So I guess it's dead. Okay, cool. Is he a babyface now again? Or are we just going to continue that story too? Because it's like, okay, what's the narrative through line? What was the point of this tournament other than we need to have a reason to have Adam Cole and MJF together? Because yes, you can rationalize that as that's the reason business-wise why they are together, but they never gave any rationalization for why this tournament actually happened. And it's one of those things that drives me nuts as a dangling plot line type thing, because it's like, well, Jeff, it's just wrestling. It's like, yeah, but it's television. And if you guys say you don't care about it, then your fans will eventually.
Wrestling is sort of like not a good defense to the charge of incoherent storytelling.
Yes,
right? Like that's sort of almost admitting, like, tacitly.
Yeah. Oh well, it's just. I mean, WWE used to do this for years and would drive us nuts. It'd be like, Chris would care about, come on, it's just wrestling. Nobody cares about this crap. And it's like, you can say that for any form of entertainment, but the moment you say that, like, that used to be the thing in improv. Well, it's just improv. so what if the show sucked tonight type of a thing. And you're like,
that means we don't care about quality.
That means we don't care. That means we don't care. That's what it means to me. And it's just,
it's not a way to improve anything.
I get it. But, and then we get to Blood and Guts. And as we have evolved in our wrestling fandom, and as we've overused the War Games concept, the War Games concept has gotten worse, in my opinion. I am not a fan of the NXT style of War Games at all, but I was happy to have it back because it had been gone for so long. But now that both companies are doing War Games, number one, we need to build this back up to being, we're getting all these guys in there to fight. And it's a battle to the death. And the cage is supposed to keep everybody inside of it. I know that's an old-fashioned thing, but it's true at the same time. The plunder has gotten out of control here, Chris. We had broken sugar glass. We had the bed of nails. We had the fans chanting for tables and then later fire because the stipulation is not enough. We need more carnage in this War Games because there's no heat amongst any of these crews. And there wasn't any real, towards the end when it started getting thumbtacky and stuff like that, it seemed like there was intent that some of these people were really trying to hurt some of these people. Don't get me wrong. But throughout the match, it felt like spots. And then, we bring back Kota Ibushi. And Kota Ibushi, God bless him. This is not the match to introduce him as Kota Ibushi. Because people want to see the old Kota Ibushi. And he is nowhere near the old Kota Ibushi. But he comes out. And he's doing basically the equivalent of the Jeff Hardy dance before Jeff Hardy saved anybody.
Oh, no. Now that you said that, I can't unsee Jeff Hardy Kota Ibushi. Because he definitely doesn't look like old Kota. And he does have a Jeff Hardy energy about him now, doesn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. But it was always hey, I need to acknowledge the fans before I go save my friends from a death struggle. And then just the highly contrived that had to be explained on Twitter as a callback to week 3 Dynamite by Tony Khan of Pac just quits on the BCC, says, I'm out of here. Now, don't get me wrong. I liked the follow-up to that Don Callis is such a weasel. He pulled his guy out there immediately. But this is submission or surrender. If Pac is so fed up with Claudio on this, which wasn't earned at all, in my opinion.
No, it was not. They
he should have just quit and then lost it for them, but instead it became, and this is again, this is Twitter mindset going into this. They did not explain this in the match at all, and you can tell me, oh, but they were showing you it. The story from Kenny's promo about friendship and how it overcomes hate, etc., etc. When, especially when the loss of a match was John Moxley saving quote unquote his stablemate from a further beating, as opposed to being we are guys who can take the pain, et cetera, that they've propped themselves up to be. But yes, the Golden Elite triumph over evil. And then they shake hands off camera, by the way, which just flummoxed me. It's like, right, that's kind of important.
That was important. And I also don't think that should really ever happen in a War Games match.
No.
I was thinking about this after watching the match. If you're going to do a cage deathy sort of match like this,
good games.
Right. It's end game. we wipe out the other team. At the end of that, there is just the wreckage of the other team.
Yes.
Aftermath, and the victorious team is riding high, whether they are the baby faces or the heels. Either is satisfying, but the narrative structure of these big climaxy cage matches should not be, long last Blackpool Combat Club, we respect you.
There's a push in all of these.
Also, the power of friendship promo, right? The power of friendship promo rings really hollow when you think about Adam Page and the Young Bucks and their interactions with the Dark Order. Like, you just have to really kind of retcon all of that out of your mind.
But he's friendly to the elite.
It's true.
No, but there's been this thing amongst these types of matches of late where just the fight and the heat and getting all these guys in there isn't enough. There is this overall narrative that we're pushing for throughout the match. And it's almost like they're making it too difficult for themselves in both WWE, NXT, and AEW, where it's like, you think of the great War Games, and the one that everybody always points to is 92. And the point of that was the fight had gone on for so long, and they snuck in a weapon into a War Games, which was seen as a dirty trick by the heels to take apart the ring. And then Larry Zbyszko ends up blowing it for them to the point where the heels isolate Larry Zbyszko, and he has to do, and the Dangerous Alliance is then shocked from then on. But the entire match is not leading to Larry Zbyszko being the idiot. The build in the match was there were some doubts about Larry Zbyszko going into the match, because, you know, he was older and there were some doubts amongst Rude and I think Austin, but I mean, they weren't overplayed. Here, it's almost like we have to tell that story throughout of the whatever their narrative choice is, when the point is, just show the fight, guys. Just show the fight. And it's like, I don't mind the set pieces to the point, but it feels like they're trying to make things make sense as they go on the fly, as opposed to going, okay, let's sit down and talk about this. And we'll, like, when Pac leaves, that makes no sense. He can just, well, there's bolt cutters under the ring, and he can, of course, cut out. Why are there bolt cutters under the ring? Let's explain that. You know, oh, it's in case of emergency. You know, there are other things that need to be explained at times, and it's like that they don't make sense. Why is Rick Knox in the ring when the War Games doesn't begin until the match beyond, when everybody's in the ring? There aren't referees in other War Games matches. I understand you kind of need it to call spots and stuff, but, you know, it's these types of little details that drive me nuts, Chris. Because I watch this as somebody who doesn't want his time wasted. And instead, I'm kind of told, well, you know, it's wrestling. It was fine. I was entertained. Let's move on. Kind of a thing. I'm just like, we've now taken War Games / Blood and Guts, and we've turned it into not the end of a story per se, but a plot point in a story. And you're like, oh, okay. Great. This doesn't destroy the Blackpool Combat Club at all, I don't think. This gets them to Pac versus Cesaro on the Ring of Honor pay-per-view that 5,000 people are going to watch, which makes it kind of not a big deal to me. I'm rambling here, but give me the rest of your thoughts on this Dynamite.
On the rest of this Dynamite, man.
Did you enjoy Blood and Guts?
I can't say that I did. I just didn't really think that the bad guy team had a chance against the elite. Like this was clearly formatted for you knew which team was going to prevail.
Yeah.
And
is that from us being too jaded, or is that because of,
I mean, dude, there's a lot of factors there, but I mean, only a fool would have bet on Blackpool Combat Club Plus.
Look, I had a parlay with the Washington Generals. Yeah, I thought, right, they were due.
Yes, they were about due. So, yeah. And then when it comes to Don Callis's stable, like, who cares now? I mean, the only way you were going to launch this is if Don Callis had masterly figured out a way to beat the elite here.
Yes.
That's the move.
I thought for certain when Pac left, I thought Jericho was going to run in there.
He needed to have a plan here rather than be like, I've lost. Like, that, who cares?
Takeshita, run!
Yeah. Like, Get away!
Run away!
Just like
Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Run away!
I'll get you next time, Batman. I just there's no intrigue at all for Don Callis's faction, which I think you have. I mean, if you're gonna do Callis heat like this, he has to just keep getting one over on Kenny Omega over and over and over and over again until the ultimate payoff.
Yes. That's the story here, is that Callis
that's supposed
has his
to be
number.
The story here. Yes. That for as annoying as Callis is, every single time he seems to have his number.
Yes. And now Takeshita's a coward. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
I don't like the heel look on Takeshita at all either. It looks silly.
He looks a little lost at times.
Yeah.
But your turn, sir.
Okay, I guess we can swing it back to Collision. I don't know, I'm trying to see if there's anything on Collision that I want to talk about. I guess we can kick it over to Raw here a little bit.
Okay.
I think we've already talked about this some, but the Judgment Day just continues to be such a strong running feature on the show. It's really interesting how all of their segments just really are clicking. And the pairing of them against Kevin Owens and stuff, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, really, really strong formatting on the show.
I agree.
These are not particularly hot takes.
I mean,
Raw is Raw, right? Like it's like, I was going to say it's like pizza, but sometimes pizza is actually really good.
Raw wasn't bad this week though. That's the weird thing. Right. I mean, it wasn't like that Viking Raiders
Raw is like a Whopper. How often do you have a Burger King Whopper?
I haven't had one in a while. But,
right. It's like once every 2 to 3 years.
But if you get one and it's fresh and it's
right.
good,
sometimes
it's really good.
It's actually pretty good.
Yes.
And there are other times where you're like, this sucks.
This has been sitting in the bin for about an hour.
But even when it's pretty good, there's also a limit. You're never sitting there and going like, this is better than a burger I could get at a restaurant. Like, and that's how I feel about Raw.
Like
Raw
that Viking
is the
Raiders
of professional wrestling.
The Viking Raiders Alpha Academy match was pretty damn fantastic. And if it were on another show, we'd be raving about it. But
yeah,
because
I thought the scene looked good in this match too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one thing I noticed on WWE was about the verbiage they were using this week. Where I had said earlier that I really wanted to return to nicknames for people. They're doing that, but in the worst way possible, where it's just descriptors like Dirty Dominic Mysterio. What were some of the others? I can't remember them offhand, but they were doing this for a lot of people where it's like it's not a real nickname. It's just kind of a descriptor type thing. Thick Boy, calling him Big.
Oh, Bronson Reed, yeah.
Yeah, Big Bronson Reed or whatever. I'm like, these aren't things that help the character necessarily. Like, no,
they're like just there.
They're just there. They're adjectives that they're adding in quotations, perhaps to change names again, where they call him Big Bronson and they drop the Reed. It feels like a precursor to Vince renaming people so he can trademark them type of a thing, as opposed to, say, you know, Like originally when he came in, it was Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, which is a great name for a wrestler. And then it was just dropped to Mr. Perfect because, you know, can't have Kurt making money off of his name. It has to be Mr. Perfect and only Mr. Perfect only type of a thing. But,
you know, okay, I'll push back on Mr. Perfect being reduced down to Mr. Perfect because I think it makes the character even more cartoony and
it is
like
cartoony, yes.
Yeah, right, but like in a good way.
Okay.
That no, I know it's cartoony, but like the idea, if you know me, Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig is just sort of, there's still a man underneath it, and I like the idea of the man being completely subsumed by the idea that he's perfect at everything. That he has gotten so into his quest of perfection that, I mean, whatever his birth name was, no longer exists. He is simply Mr. Perfect.
I liked the birth name with the Mr. Perfect before it. I that's just me though, but I get it.
It's a rare example though. I would say that's actually stronger characterization rather than weaker.
Can I move to SmackDown real quick and just say Jey Uso is killing it?
Yeah, he just keeps doing it, man.
I mean, look, this thing is outliving what it should be doing. And they've taken Jimmy off to kind of give Jey his shine right now. That injury is purely fiction. And I don't think Jay's the final emotional crux of this angle. I think eventually it will be Roman once again. But for right now, this build, the SummerSlam and the interplay and the Heyman tempting him with the "you're acting like a tribal chief now" stuff. You can call it cinema. I don't. I just call it good wrestling angle building. And I think it's very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, the Bloodline is very much a universe. And yes, the universe is, you know, like slightly absurd. There is no island of relevancy. I don't know who needs to hear that. It doesn't actually exist. And Roman Reigns does not have tribal ceremonies in his off time because there is no Roman Reigns. But the whole thing is that is a coherent universe. And within it, Jey Uso's character, like, remains really interesting and compelling, even when they have weird characterization beat missteps. Like, the broad strokes have always been there with Jey's character for the last couple of years. And obviously Heyman's always campy. Like, that's what makes Heyman great. I mean, sometimes he can be menacing, but like, he has been campy as in the obsequious, "Oh, my tribal chief." Like, and he's been doing it for so long that, like, you almost start to believe that he's really just become this absolute maggot to Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think all this stuff works. And it's consistent.
He's the ultimate bootlicker.
Right, right. And they've even teased him being disloyal and, like, it hasn't quite come to pass or whatever. And, yeah, no, I think the Jey build's going to be good.
Did you get a chance to watch NXT?
NXT is actually one that I skipped this week because I wanted to watch Collision.
I watched parts of it. Thea Hale remains just an absolute gimmick and I love her. But they brought back, our boys, Umberto and Angel Garza to wrestle a tag match. And then by the end of the tag match, it looks like they're already splitting them up. But they're still very talented. They fought Nate Frazier and Dragon Lee, and that was a hell of a tag match. I thought that, I mean, they're doing good stuff on NXT too. Just little things. I mean, it's not great. They did Scripps and A-Kid or whatever the heck, Axiom versus two new guys, and of course Scripps immediately turns on him, so he's out of the picture. So we're not going to see Reggie unless he's taking falls again. But no, I didn't get a chance to see a lot of NXT either this week, so I'm not going to try and talk about. But other than Dominic Mysterio is your new NXT champion, and it looks like I like this in terms of the Judgment Day. Looks like they're going around trying to pick their spots to do belt collecting, and that what this is going to end up being is that Damian Priest eventually cashes in on Finn to take the title from him. That's the thing. I liked that. I liked the Seth Rollins Finn Balor sit down promo type thing. I thought that was nice and intense. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, Judgment Day again, a strong feature on all shows. Although I did not see this one.
I don't have anything else. Do you?
I think I'm out too.
Okay, well, no kids, so there goes that. But follow me on Crap Game 30. You can follow me on Twitter at Crap Game 13. I'm not leaving there. You can follow Chris on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. That is Dr. Nove. You can just follow the show on Twitter at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. I retweet when Voices of Wrestling gets around to tweeting that. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. I also do shows over on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. Live hot takes on Dynamite. We start that show at 20 minutes after Dynamite starts, and it's posted about an hour and a half afterwards. Chris has other projects involved. He will tell you about them now.
Yeah, I teach guitar lessons. If you are interested in guitar lessons, you can, of course, hit me up on Instagram. As Jeff mentioned, it's Dr_Nove, N-O-V. So hit me up there for guitar lessons. I did the Jimi Hendrix course, so that's available if you want it as well. I can get you old copies of it and stuff. I mean, we square up on that. So hit me up for guitar lessons. Follow me on Instagram and keep living your dreams.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.